This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to Beyond the Wall. We are going to go through some really quick news. Then we're going to talk a bunch of rules, FAQ, and what changed on the restricted list. And then we're going to have a really quick closing segment.
All right, this is episode 38? I can't even remember. When we do them on the same week, it's confusing. But this is the one where we get to review the new FAQ, which means that we're releasing this episode early, but it is not a bonus episode. It is taking the place of the episode we would normally have aired on the 20th, October 20th. So this is just you guys getting stuff early, but this is not an additional episode. However, despite the fact that when we do this, we get almost no news because we've covered it all last week, we have a few small things. FFG posted a extension for pre-registration for Worlds to the 23rd of October.
Which is awesome because I actually heard a bunch of people saying that they had forgotten to pre-register and they were trying to scramble around and they were like, oh, now I'm going to have to pay the extra. Nope. This is your last chance. You get a little bit of a push. And I think FFG really wants to get their numbers right for buying their food, for stocking their bar, for making sure there's place for everyone. Mm-hmm. And they definitely have two spots for me and you, Alex.
Oh, yeah. They sent out that survey asking me what events I'm playing at and so on. Which reminds me of the second thing I wanted to mention. There is now, and we had actually berated them for not having this, there is an official draft. And this got snuck in, edited somewhere, but I went to go look at the side event schedule and now has that. On Saturday, if you didn't make the cut, you could play in the official draft. And then they say that they're going to have prize support for any time there's an unofficial draft. So if you can get like 8 people together with draft packs, they'll throw in prize support.
Which is awesome. Weekend.
But that also means that if I have the misfortune of not, well, in the likely scenario of missing the cut, I will be playing in the draft on Saturday.
Me too.
There we go. Aside from that, this is the week. This is FAQ 5.3. That was followed the next day by 5.31, so hopefully we are giving you the scoop on 5.31, because 2C1C normally records on Wednesdays, and so they'll have just the outdated old FAQ.
Yes, and that way you can listen to two podcasts doing FAQ, one right after the other.
Yeah, do you save the best one for last, or do you listen to us first?
We'll let the listeners decide.
Right, so in order to discuss this brand new FAQ, and I mean really, really brand new, because FAQ 5.3 came out on Wednesday, and 5.31 came out today.
It means that there was some huge changes made that I noticed. Huge.
You actually noticed changes between 5.3 and 5.31?
Okay, I'll be a little bit honest. So this guy I know that's a little bit more anal than me noticed changes, and he told me about them.
It's me, isn't it?
I'm not naming any names. I'm just saying that there's some big changes.
All right,
in and because, this person's mind.
And because normally when we do these FAQ casts, I get overruled with regards to actually discussing the rules section. This time we brought on a fellow rules lawyer, Ratatoska on the boards, or Helmut Holberger, who has been on the show previously. So hi, Helmut.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me again.
It's always a pleasure to have you, though I'm a little sad that you'll be ganging up on me with Alex to talk rules.
Yeah, we'll bash the rules into your head.
So let's start off with the article. They've done this every time, and I'm always grateful that they do it. They give a little bit of designer insight into what they're trying to do with the FAQ. So were there any surprises there for you guys?
I read the article actually after I read the FAQ, and the thing that surprised me a bit was that I have the impression that they wanted the change to Harrenhal to do something. I don't think it does, but yeah.
We may get into that with the errata, but I agree that Harrenhal change is just not the right change. John, anything from that article that jumped out at you?
Well, in the past, they've really made the changes based on a lot of hard evidence, like major events, big tournaments. I feel like some of those changes, particularly like brand, and it was kind of noted there, was made because of other influences, their own playtesting, their own games. And there seemed to be some kind of mention of that in the article, and I think that was interesting to me.
Yeah, that's actually a good point, that these are sort of preemptive errata and that we haven't seen the damage Wheels Within Wheels can do on a large scale in the competitive scene, but they're clearly anticipating that. For me, what surprised me a little bit from this article was them discussing the 3x copy limit, where they say that, you know, after a bunch of playtesting, they decided on this rather than the 3x trigger limit that we've talked about in the past. And I think this is the first mention that we've ever had of FFG specifically talking about the playtesting process or talking about playtesting FAQs. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, I was actually hoping there was some kind of play testing going on there. So it actually is a nice thing to have some kind of confirmation that they are doing actual play testing.
But it must be very difficult to do, because the FAQ is traditionally used in this way, at least, to adjust the meta as a whole. It's kind of hard to predict the meta in any significant way, especially from a limited sample size of play testing.
Yeah, but they might have a dedicated group now. Like, we don't have a lot of information on this playtesting. Like, the only thing I knew about playtesting in the past was that on their website, players used to be able to apply. I don't even know if that's still the case. So who knows how they're going about this.
Okay, so let's jump into maybe the tournament rules first. They actually received quite a large overhaul this time with something that happened in many, many LCGs. So this new illegal deck procedure and this new illegal game state rule seems to have been tacked on to most of their LCGs with various wordings. What do you guys think of that?
I was actually surprised about the illegal deck procedure thing, because these are very specific new rules about that. I would not have anticipated something like it. I have never heard anybody going about illegal decks in exactly that way, and I don't see the full implications of that now, but I'm surprised about it.
So this is the idea that if cards are found to be in your deck illegally, you flip them over and you play them as blank cards, right?
Yeah. Have you ever seen that happen in any game ever?
I don't. I've seen, like, a lot of times if there's an illegal card, I've actually seen at Gen Cons where they let the player replace the card completely. Like, they had a 60-card deck, they had two restricted, and they let them take three cards from outside and put them into their deck. But they did the same thing that they mentioned in the rules there, that they had lost, I think it was like in the third round, yeah, this was discovered, they lost all their previous wins.
Well, here you only lose your current win.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, so I can play an illegal deck all the way up to like my round six match, and then that's when they catch me, and that's when I only lose that one match, but not all the other ones?
Yeah.
That can't be right. I mean, this is actually...
Right?
Yeah, but this actually incentivizes cheating. I mean, I'm not implying that anybody in the Great Thrones community would actually do it, but the rules, if they are, as you say, they incentivize it. So I'm really not sure this is the way we should go about things there. No?
Well, I don't know if it incentivizes cheating. It gives a penalty for cheating that maybe isn't as harsh as some people were enforcing before, but in the cut, it still gives you an automatic loss.
Right, but in the Swiss... I mean, what would happen if in the Swiss I cheated and came forward at the cut to flip my card?
I mean, it depends. If you're deliberately cheating, if the TO thinks you're deliberately cheating, that the TO is well within his rights to kick you out.
I would hope so, yeah.
But if he thinks that's a mistake, you've now placed first in the Swiss or whatever, and then you're sacrificing three cards in your deck to be completely blank dead draws for your four rounds of the cut. I mean, that's still... pretty risky gamble. I wouldn't say it's incentivized.
I'm not saying it's incentivized. I'm just saying I don't like the fact that they don't also lose their previous games, because the situation that I see most often actually is not that their people are running multiple restricted. I've seen probably in three or four smaller local tournaments that someone had four of a certain card. And this normally happens with, like, the Cs, because you get them in a bunch of different packs, and they thought they had three and they have four. That's a pretty big advantage, being able to get that extra, well, it's not a huge advantage, but, I mean, they're getting that extra resource, and in that situation, they just flip the card and continue on with the wins they had? Like, how many of those, if I had three or four of those four cards, like, it just seems so weird.
I don't know. I don't really particularly.
I don't think it's a big issue. I mean, there's not a lot of...
No, that's true. Not a lot of this going on, actually. But still, it rubs me the wrong way that you can actually win, like, six games in a row with an illegal deck, and, in fact, nothing really happens to you. Except that you lose the seventh game, yeah.
Keeping in mind that if the TO thinks you did it deliberately,
yes, of course,
he can easily take that upon you. So this is...
Yeah,
I honestly don't think anyone does
deliberately. I should go back on the incentivizing thing, but still it does rub me the wrong way a little bit there.
I quite like the line, spectators are not participants in a game and cannot interact with the players. And also the illegal game state idea that it's not the job of the judge or anyone else to maintain that legal game state. It's the player's job, and then if they call the judge, then it becomes the judge's job. The impression I get from this is the judge should not be running around policing all the game states.
I mean, that's good. Part of a Game of Thrones is remembering all that kind of stuff. So I like that. I like that there's part of the game should be to remember to do all those things and trigger your triggers and trigger your passives and all that kind of stuff.
And spectators are not part of that game.
Yep. Yeah, but that happens a lot, especially in big final games when lots of people are watching. Even in smaller matches, I remember I was playing a match that was playing Bear Island. And the Bear Island player continually tried to kill my unique characters when I had a save only for uniques on the board in Morocco. And one of the players, after the first time he did, actually said to him, oh, don't kill his unique characters, kill his non-uniques, he won't be able to save them. And I was like, whoa, okay, who am I playing?
Yeah,
you or you and your two friends behind you?
Yeah.
You know, that's a little extreme. Yeah. So
right.
I called the judge at that point.
So, shall we move on to the document itself, the fabled FAQ 5.3.1? And I should mention, I am the anal person John was talking about the differences between 5.3 and 5.3.1. As far as I can tell, the differences are they fixed the card number of a card that was put on the melee-restricted list. The Danny was the wrong card number. Yes, I noticed this kind of stuff, only because someone else had mentioned that it was wrong. So when I saw that it was updated, that's one of the first things I looked at. But also, I think the tournament rules had a couple... Asha Greyjoy was still on the restricted list, even though she was on the list of things that had come off the restricted list, so that got sorted out. So I think it's just minor typos that were changed in this version.
It's not the first time either that they publish an FAQ and then they have to publish a new version with slight cosmetic changes because they missed some typos or something. It has happened before, so it's not actually that surprising.
So I think we should start with rules clarifications and maybe... Start with the copy limit. What do you guys think about that?
The only really, really important new ruling in the whole FAQ. The other things are all more or less cosmetic stuff. Many of them don't introduce new rules at all. They just clarify wordings and stuff. So this is really the big one, the copy limit. And well, it fixes those problems we had with infinite loops, infinite combos that so many players hated, myself included. So I'm happy about that. Of course, there are also some probably unintended consequences. For example, people have been talking about Lost Spearman to the Martell card that is very efficient. You only pay one gold and it's a three strength Bicon character, but after you play it, your opponent can need an influence to send it back to your hand. So before you could play him as often as you wanted, but now you can only play him three times. So if your opponent has three standing influence, it doesn't need for anything else, then you would basically pay three gold for nothing and not get the character in the end. So this is a small change that has nothing to do with infinite loops, but I don't think it's really a big issue. Basically, it's a very good thing.
I tend to feel like this does about 90% of what we need for, you know, for really proper shoring up to avoid infinite loops if we want to. If we did the three times per phase trigger limit, I think we'd be at 100%. I think this does less collateral damage. So you mentioned the Lost Spearman case, but if we were to talk about a 3x trigger limit, I could say if I have two conclaves and they're not kneeling to attack, then I could only potentially trigger a total of three times,
yes.
You know, something like that. There'd be a lot more common situations in which it'd be interfered with. But I still feel like we may see some infinite combos. I obviously can't think of any off the top of my head now, because a lot of them involve playing cards to either bounce the cards or to bring them back from the discard into your hand and then play them again. So I think this is 90%. I'm not sure how I feel about them still leaving that 10%, but I don't know. We'll see. Maybe no one will ever break it and it will be fine.
I cannot prove it either way, but my feeling is that it's probably better to get 90% of cases and do little collateral damage than go at the 100% and introduce a rule that has far-reaching consequences. Maybe the wise course of action there.
Yeah, well, I think it's the wise course of action right up. I'll probably think it's the wise course of action right up until the time where somebody invents a new infinite loop, and then I'll say, how did FFG not see this coming? They should have done the other one. All right. So as we move on to the next one, I think it's great that we have you on for this one, because I think over the last day, the amount of different ways people have misinterpreted this change has really gotten under your skin.
It was not really the amount, but it was the staccato of increasingly bizarre interpretations that came on both on Eggard cards and on Card Game DB in a very short amount of time that has really worn me down a bit. I think the problem is that when new entry in the FAQ comes up, or if an entry is modified, then people tend to think, wow, this must be like portentous. This must mean something. And then maybe sometimes they get excited and they don't read properly or don't think hard enough what it might really mean. And then they go on Eggard cards and write the first thing that comes to their minds. Oh my God, rivers don't work anymore. Oh my God, we can't cancel Outwit anymore. Oh my God, we can cancel Outwit, but if it is canceled, we can just trigger it again. The thing is, it means nothing of those things. Basically, this is just a rules clarification. It's not a rules update. Nothing in rules has changed. It's just they reworded it to make it more clear, and in doing so, they have made it a lot less clear, obviously, which is sometimes happens.
To summarize this ruling that is essentially nothing new, what they've done is they've said that even though we know that plot cards themselves are not in play and that used plot piles are not out of play or in play, that the sort of generalization that you're applying to cards where they can only interact with cards in play unless they say otherwise sort of applies like that for revealed plots, and the rule that you can't really trigger stuff from out of play sort of applies to used plots.
Yeah, but this has always been played that way. Basically, they said a card effect can interact with the revealed plot. It has always been like that. They said a card effect only can interact with the plot in the used pile if the effect specifically says it. It's also always been like that, and it says that card effects can only interact with cards in out-of-play areas if the card effect states it specifically. Also, that has always been like that.
So I think this is basically a reminder that Forgotten Plans does not blank things in the used pile.
Exactly, exactly.
All right, well, John, you've been awfully quiet because I know you enjoy rules so much. Why don't you walk us through this next one on search resolution?
All right, so let's talk restricted list.
No. Search resolution. We gotta.
I just walked through it. No one cares.
That's actually
people do care.
If you look at the number of posts on CardGameDB and Eggard cards, they really are trying to make sure they understand the implications of all of these rules, so-called changes.
I'm gonna tell you something that's gonna make you upset, Alex. Are you ready for it?
No.
I didn't read that part of the FAQ.
All right.
You know what I do?
I'll read it to you in my best soothing voice, and you'll tell me what it means.
All right.
Search resolution. A player is not obligated to find the result of a search in order to resolve a search effect.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I did read that. I lied. I just didn't remember it.
All right. So what does that mean, John?
It means you're no longer forced to actually get a card anymore, even if you have one in the deck, you don't have to call over someone. Like, before in the past, if I had a Time for Ravens and you ruled by decree me T1, and I said, oh, I don't have any Ravens in my deck, so you can't rule by decree me, you basically had to call over a judge to go through the guy's deck and ensure that there was no Ravens in the deck that he could get to come out. And it also prevented you from playing certain effects if you didn't have any of those. For instance, calling the prize. So if you had a...
Calling the banners, yeah.
Calling the banners. So if you had no prize cards in your deck, even though you were running like a Dark Wings, Dark Word deck, you wouldn't be able to play it for the draw because you didn't have a legal search target.
Even worse, you might not remember whether you have a legal search target.
Yeah, exactly. So it just made this weird circumstance. So I think they cleared that up.
Yeah, I think it's handy. I think this is another thing where you're less likely to need to call a judge, less dependent. It's giving some clearer rules for when you need to call a judge and when you don't, and I'm glad to see this one. There is still one case I want to mention where you're forced to do these kinds of things. So, for instance, Manning the City Wall says you have to play an army from your hand if you have one in your hand, and if you say that you don't have one, you know, just because your opponent also flipped Valor or however it's going to happen, you would still potentially need to call a judge over to check that your opponent does not have an army in hand.
Yeah, I think these cases that have nothing to do with search but follow the same general principle or have the same problem, I don't think you can fix them with a blanket FAQ entry like you can with a search. The problem with Manning the City Walls is more the wording on the card. It should say May.
It should have said May, yeah. But it's too late and we're never going to errata it. Right.
Oh, I wish we did, but I can't say that on your show.
I had another rant today about errata. I might even get a chance to rant about errata during this one. So I'll guide us quickly through this next one because the wording is really quite confusing. This is 3.47, change in statistic or property. So this is actually a change in ruling as well. And this is essentially telling you that if you want to trigger a response to something losing strength or something losing a keyword or losing an icon or gaining one or whatever the case is, there are two things that have to be met. And the first one is that they have to have a new modifier applied to them. So it can't just be that an old modifier expired and so now they don't have that two extra strength. And the second one is that their actual value has to have changed. And that means that if they had zero strength and you applied -4 to them, the end value of their strength is still zero, their strength has not changed, you could not trigger a response off something losing strength. The same for an icon. If he had an intrigue icon and he had a court advisor, so he had two intrigue icons, if you use the Scourge to take off an intrigue icon, your opponent cannot discard a card to give him back an intrigue icon because he has not lost the icon, even though he has gained a -1 modifier. The state of having an icon or not having one hasn't changed.
I really like this because it harmonizes the two rules, which is nice for me because, you know, I don't like rules and having to remember two was confusing.
Yeah,
so I like that about it.
It used to work differently. It used to work that strength, your Shadow Parasite, you could trigger for any negative modifier your opponent received. So if you had a one strength character and you kept forever burning it ad infinitum, you could trigger Shadow Parasite every single time, even though you were functionally going from -25 strength to -26, etc. And now it works like the icons and the keywords and Corset Aria and all these other things. You have to have lost the state.
Yeah, though, you know, I think the house that affects the most is probably Targ with things like Shadow Parasite and the character that grants them a draw when they reduce the strength of characters.
Megacrone, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Really, the next change is a little minor one to duplicates.
Super minor.
Yeah, it basically says that duplicates have no properties of the card they would be if they were not a duplicate. It is only considered a duplicate. I think this is a place to point for your opponent when you say you can discard his dupes with Wintertime Marauders, and they say, no, no, my dupe is unique. And then you just point to that, and you say, no, it's not.
That's about it. It's really only a cleanup of the wording. The wording was suboptimal before, and it is better now. I could explain in detail what the problem with the old wording was, but I really don't think Sean or anybody else would appreciate it, so we can just leave it at that.
All right. The next change actually isn't highlighted in red, but I noticed it because I noticed these things. On page 21, there's actually a change in the framework action window. Did you notice that, Helmut?
I so didn't.
Have a look at it and tell me what you think.
Oh, my God. 21.
Oh my god, I just noticed what it is. If you didn't notice what it is, I'm so talking about it.
Okay.
You're on the spot now.
I'm on the spot, and I totally am. Framework Action Window on 21. Ah, there's a star in step 2 now.
I'm step 5.
Oh, come on. No responses are permitted during phase and framework action window. What a waste of ink. Everybody knows that.
Everybody knows that.
Yes.
I don't think if that's
they,
true.
If they don't, they should get out of Thrones. Come on.
I think it's good to have that there. I think that generally people do forget that. And when you look for time in questions, the first place you look is these charts. I think that's the right place to put it.
I was, of course, kidding. It is a great, small cosmetic change, but very useful, and I'm glad that it is.
All right. Well, we're nearing the end of the rules. We'll get there's two FAQ entries, really just clarifying things that everybody was playing correctly anyway. The idea that you can dupe Shadows cards straight from hand or coming out of Shadows, and who gets prize power when a character chains control. People have generally been playing that fine. Yeah. But they belong in this section, in the FAQ section and not the rules section, so I'm glad to see them here.
Absolutely. The prize thing really can be deduced from the normal rules of the game, but still some people were confused, so it's great the place to put it. The Shadow thing is a little bit different because this one really is, well, it also can be deduced from the written rules, but you have to be very detail-minded and look at it in a certain way.
All right, John, so we're basically done with the rulings. There are a few more rulings, one that might sneak in the errata, but do you want to guide us to your favorite section, John?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about the cards that went on and off the restricted list.
So we're not even going to talk about the errata.
No, let's talk about the cards. You said I could go to my favorite section.
You can go to your favorite section. All right, fine.
That's the cards that came on and off the restricted list. So let's start with the ones that went on. We see that Wheels Within Wheels went on, and we see that Bran went on, which I think were both needed. I mean, I obviously didn't do as much detailed testing as FFG on these things, but I could see that Wheels with Wheels, and I think everyone could see that Wheels with Wheels was going to be a problem card if they didn't do something like Restricted.
Yeah, Bran Stark was a little odd, but a lot of people had taken to calling it Bera's best card. So I think I'm not necessarily that surprised. I think it's really the original function of the Restricted list to say these two cards are really problematic together, and in this case it's crossing the numbers forward with Bran Stark.
Yeah. I'm a little bit sad about it because this kills several popular deck archetypes now. Maybe I would have liked to see them do Bran and Dany, do them the other way around. They made Daenerys House Targaryen only, and they restricted Bran. Maybe they could have made Bran House Stark only and restrict Daenerys. Might have preferred that one, because I think a classic Dark Wings, Dark Words build with Bran and River Plots is very strong and very fun, but probably not overpowered build, and I hate to see it go out of the game right now. Also, Stark Riverlings was a fun and good but not overpowered build, and this one is also dead.
Now, surprisingly enough, there is actually, and this is going to be a shout-out to one of our listeners, Scantrell, Steve Cantrell. There is another addition to the restricted list this time, and this is in the Time for Raven cycle. It's not highlighted in red. This is A Game of Sivas. Because it used to be Game of Sivas, and
oh,
I remember
wow.
that last time they had an FAQ, and I specifically mentioned, they finally fixed, I can't even remember what card it was anymore. John, do you remember what card it was that they fixed the typo on?
I don't think we should worry about typos. I think we should get back to the brand and Daenerys comments that Helmut had. And I actually totally agree with him. I think that Daenerys is an extremely powerful card, and just making it Targ-only may not have been enough. It sounds like they did a bunch of testing. I'm like, did you guys test Daenerys? Because she is ridiculous. And she was abused of all the houses the most, actually, out of her own house, Targ, with all their stand effects, with long lances, like giving her a dragon trait or giving her a weapon and multi-standing her. I mean, she's one of the key pieces in the Dragon Pit deck that won in DC, and she's been basically a key piece in all of the big decks from Targ that have been winning recently.
Yeah, well, you're never going to get an argument out of me. I would much rather have seen her restricted than any form of errata ever. So you've got me on board just by default.
Yeah, she's an obvious contender for restriction, in my opinion. But FFG knows, right?
Well, we gotta hope so. one of the reasons I am surprised not to see her restricted is there was that Gen Con interview with Damon Stone. This was a Team Covenant interview, but he specifically mentioned, you know, Thrones has this FAQ tool and the restricted list, and you can occasionally design a card sort of with the idea that it might get restricted, and it gives you a little bit more design space. And then his example was Dany. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so they're going to give it a little bit of play, and then they're going to restrict it. And clearly they've avoided doing that. Yep. All right, so what about the cards that came off, John?
I think they took Asha Greyjoy off because they had to when they made Dany House Targaryen only, because the main reason she was on there, one of the main reasons, was because she was being used so effectively, mostly power behind the throne, but out of house. And that was one of their reasons for putting it on. So when they started doing all these erratas to House Targ only, they said, well, we better do the same thing with Asha Greyjoy, I think, so they took her off.
Well, we did say that we thought, you know, Dany is getting the Asha treatment and that she's starting to get splashed in power behind the throne, so she's going to get the Asha treatment in getting restricted. But it turns out that Asha got the Dany Dany treatment in getting house only.
I can totally get behind that one, because Asha is very, very strong, but she is not inherently restriction-worthy. And I agree with John, the problem was that they got played out of house a ton. Don't you find it a little bit odd that they design cards, like we had in the newest cycle, again, examples of, that encourage people to play cards out of house, but then when they actually do it, then they restrict that possibility. We've seen it with Asha, with Bran, with Dany now, with Aegon's Hill, with Rhaenys Hill. So I think it's a bit strange, but if you look at the cases specifically, they have a point in most of those cases, but it's still a bit strange, don't you think?
Yeah, that's a valid point. I mean, they seem to have been okay with most of the stuff coming out of Conquest X so far. But it's this idea that you splash it and you're willing to pay the extra 2 gold. I don't think it's necessarily an issue with the splashing. I think it's the fact that your character was undercosted by 2 gold to start with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that basically... So I actually think that one of the most important changes, because it was probably the least predictable, although it's not particularly surprising, is the fact that they removed Bleeds. Now, my first instinct was, oh, Bleeds, it's back. Should I rebuild all these Bleeds decks? And now I'm sort of thinking, it's just enough of a threat that I'm going to build maybe with it in mind for Worlds, but I don't think it'll see a ton of play. I think in a meta with this much cancel, it's going to be hard to pull it off with Royal Decrees, with Harrenhals. I think it definitely can come off the list now. I think it's still a threat, but it's sort of this cloud off in the distance. I'm not too worried about it, but I'm really pleased to see it come off the list.
Yeah, I think it deserved to come off with Harrenhal in the meta.
Yeah, I'm super, super fine with it. You gotta remember that Bleeds was in the game from the very beginning, and it was never a huge problem. It was never one of the cards people complained about, as far as I can remember. It only became a problem by the end of 2013, the first month of 2014, when the meta and the card pool was at a point where a lot of cogs and mechanisms came together to build a very, very strong machine that was like pulling the game in a direction many people disliked. And Bleeds was one of those cogs, but the game has evolved and has changed. Harrenhal is a very big part of that. And so I think we are just getting Bleeds back does not get us back to where we were like
at the beginning
9 months ago.
Yeah.
So I think it opens up more possibilities, which I like, but I don't think it's going to be a problem.
Yeah,
talk to me again in 3 months. But,
yeah. Exactly. They actually changed the melee list, which is something they do less often, and that people have actually complained about. There was a recent interview on La Roca Castrally, the Castrally Rock site in Spain, run by Alvaro, with Corey, who's designed all these fantastic agendas, and it came up that really it seems a little bit like even FFG treats melee as a second-class citizen. The meta has been much more stagnant. Dragon's decks, for instance, have been so prominent in a way that if they were in Joust, they'd have been hit by the restricted list a couple of times. And maybe in response to that, we've seen a direct hit to that dragon deck. We've seen the Queen of Dragons, Dani, and By Sword or By Guile, both cards that are basically auto-includes in that deck, get hit by the list.
I think the dragon deck will still be extremely powerful even with those restrictions, and some people will take it to Worlds and do really well.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's killed the deck, but I think it's forced you to make a decision about your restricted, and if you're choosing Dani, you're at least losing the power claim events. Before, you could have been running Make an Example or Superior Claim, and now By Sword or By Guile, and now you can't run any of those with Dani. So I think it's just a bit of a tweak. I think that the biggest thing that'll allow people to reconsider building the Dragon's deck is the fact that Mel's Favor is on the restricted list. That frees up a bit of space. Although I do think Mel's Favor will still find its way into a lot of Era decks.
Yeah, it'd still be extremely powerful.
That no attachments basically made dragons almost compulsory in last Gen Con.
Or things that eat dragons and don't put power on characters like Greatjoy.
And the last one on that list is Harrenhal, which I think is no surprise to anyone who's played Melee in the last 4 months. Yeah. That had to go on the list, so.
It was in every deck. It was, you know, it met that criteria of being played just too much.
All right, so 2-3 little minor points. The actual errata, most of which we've discussed already. So both Dani and Asha have the House Greyjoy or House Targ, respectively, errata, so that they can only be played in that house. Here's the one that really bothers me. This is the new Harrenhal errata, and we talked about it a little bit earlier. Helmut mentioned this. This is the Harrenhal errata that says Harrenhal cannot be triggered if it has 3 or more gold tokens on it. Now, not only do I hate errata, even if you had to errata this card, I think this is the wrong errata for it. This one actually really aggravates me.
Maybe we should explain why that is. maybe not everybody is as intimately familiar with the inner workings of Harrenhal as you are, Alex.
Let me try. It doesn't fix the problem with the Cancel Fest still. So during Valor, we can still go back and forth and have like 9 million gold on our Harrenhal before it goes away.
Not quite. So you can still only have 3 gold on your Harrenhal at that point. You can eventually have more than 3 gold on it, depending on the order of cancel resolutions. But the real problem here is that one of the least intuitive aspects of this card is the fact that if you trigger a cancel, you kill the character. That's part of the cost. But
you won't get the gold necessarily.
Only if the cancel is successful. So if your opponent cancels your cancel, which happens somewhat often, especially against Greyjoy, then suddenly the character is dead, but you shouldn't put a gold token on the card. And this can get really quite tricky, because then you might want to trigger Harrenhal to cancel that cancel, and then when you work through the list again, you have no idea how many gold tokens you should be putting on the card.
Because you should have 2 if you actually canceled the cancel.
Correct. If you canceled the cancel, you should have 2. If you didn't, you should have none. And you wind up with these very large changes in state, where you could potentially wind up putting 9 of them on, or depending. Right. But it seems like what they wanted to fix was the idea that you could essentially cancel every save of the board with your Harrenhal during a Valor, and they have somewhat done that.
You can kill.
But to me, that was
3.
The lesser of 2 offenses of this card, and if you really did feel like it needed an errata, this was the wrong one.
I disagree a little bit. I do think the Valor interaction was the biggest problem with the card. I kind of agree with you that the complexity of these interactions when 2 Harrenhals are on board that cancel each other all the time, that's a bit of an issue, but I think by now people know how it works, and it's not that big of a problem anymore. If I read the article we talked in the beginning about, if I read it correctly, then it looks to me maybe they also want to prevent this kind of thing, but this erratum, it does not prevent that. But in my opinion, I'm not sure it's a bad thing, but yeah.
And I guess there's only one more piece of errata, and this one is, again, one of those clarification errata. This is the kind of errata that doesn't bother me. This is the kind of errata that takes the card and says, it didn't technically work exactly the way you expected it to. Now it does. But for basically every player, you were playing it correctly. Problem was that technically a face-down character was, or a face-down card is not a character, so you couldn't return an attached character to your hand. And now it says an attached face-down card. Again, doesn't change the way the card plays. It just makes it work within the existing rule structure. It's clarification errata. It doesn't get my blood rising in the same way some of the other stuff does.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. I have to admit, I didn't even bother to figure out what this one meant, because who plays the Brave Companions?
It's a bad card. It's a very bad card. There's one thing I sort of wanted to mention, and it's on my own little personal rant. I've frequently mentioned how opposed I am to errata, and someone actually asked me about that earlier today when discussing the FAQ with me, and I finally sort of came up with an analogy that I liked to explain it. To me, it's the idea that you would never print an alternate art card that did not have text on it, and just had the name of the card and the assumption that all your opponents know what the card does. Right?
Well, can't disagree with that.
It's a bad idea to get new players in. It's a bad idea to include it. It's almost like trying to trick your opponent into not knowing what the card is so that he'll forget what it does. And in a way, to me, an errated card is even worse than that. It has misleading text. It has text that says something other than what the card actually does. And it's just this horrible situation for a player who's not intimately familiar with every piece of errata. And in some cases, these cards have nothing to do or very little to do with the way you'd expect it to work. In the case of, for instance, Threat from the East, the wording has been completely changed. In the case of Griff, for instance, the wording has been completely changed. So it's just misleading text on cards, and that's even worse for any player not intimately familiar with every aspect of the wording.
I don't think anybody ever said that errata were a good thing. I just can't get myself worked up the way you do, Alex. It's I think it's a necessary evil, because I wouldn't want all those cards get banned. So I see it as a necessary evil, but you obviously hate it with a passion, and I respect that, but I just can't get bothered about it.
But there are lots of cards that are completely relegated to the binder because they're completely useless cards, but nobody says, oh, it should be errated to make it playable. Nobody takes errata the other way around and says this is a completely stupid card that should never have been printed and is useless, like the Bone Way, should be errated to be a useful card. They only say it when a card is too powerful and that it should be errated to be toned down. And to me, that's what the restriction in the ban list is. And they should just go ahead and get rid of those cards if they're not happy with what the card does.
Well, they don't have a banned list at the moment. They went to great lengths to not have cards on the banned list. They errated the cards they had there. So obviously they see the banned list as a bigger problem than errata. Well, as I said, if they look at it that way, more power to them. I think this is a game that demands a lot of involvement and work if you want to play on the tournament scene anyway. So it's not as too much to remember a few errata, and if you're only playing casually, you just can ignore them anyway. So I'm not seeing the problem.
All right. Well, I think that about wraps it up. I think there's one more thing we didn't mention, which is that this FAQ does not actually take effect until the 20th. So that's until Monday. That means that it takes effect the 20th and Worlds is the 6th. That's a pretty short period.
Well, you have it before it. It's a short period for people to play and stuff. But, you know, we've had it the whole time.
Yeah, and thankfully it wasn't a huge upset. Had they changed 10 or 15 cards off the restricted list, I think 2 weeks would have been too little.
Even if they did, good players will come through. I mean, the field is the same for everybody, and the good players will prevail. They would prevail anyway. So.
Yeah, but I'm a better deck refiner, so I want more time, because that brings me on the... I start to pretend I'm a good player once I've managed to tweak a deck for 3 weeks.
Okay.
I'd like tournaments 3-4 days after the FAQ.
I know. You're a fast builder.
If we could have a tournament right away, that'd be great.
All right. Well, Helmut, thank you very much for joining us, especially...
Thanks for having me.
...this last minute.
It was a pleasure.
And hopefully you get a little bit of sleep before you get assaulted by an army of 4-year-olds.
I seriously doubt it, because I think my wife is going to kill me when I come to bed now at 3:45 in the morning. Okay.
You're a dedicated rules lawyer.
I wouldn't have missed the FAQ episode for the world.
Oh, perfect. All right. Thanks, Helmut.
Have a good
Thanks,
day.
Guys. Bye.
Valborg Magulis is still this weekend. If you're anywhere in the area of Scandinavia, check out that tournament. And
thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.